kingdom treasure. I wonder how many of you have ever heard of a man named Kyle MacDonald. You see, Kyle MacDonald was a man who had a problem. You see, he was stuck in a dead-end job and was seriously strapped for cash. One day, I don't know why, he came up with what seemed like the most improbable idea. This is not red, but you get the point. He started out with one red paperclip. And then he went on to trade on the internet until he could trade eventually for a house. First, Kyle traded the paperclip for a fish-shaped pen. Next, he traded the pen for a doorknob. He traded the doorknob for a Coleman stove. He traded the Coleman stove for an electric generator. He traded the electric generator for a Budweiser sign and a keg of beer. You know, I wondered if he almost stopped there. Anyway. He traded those two items for a snowmobile. Exactly 1 year and 14 trades later, Kyle MacDonald finally reached his goal. He exchanged a part in a Hollywood movie for a home in Saskatchewan. Now, the true story of Kyle MacDonald is told in his own book, One Red Paperclip. Now, the book has also been made into a movie. Fame, fortune, a book and movie deal, and a home. It all began with what? One red paperclip. Sounds incredible, doesn't it? Perhaps MacDonald was just lucky because, you know, when he first tried, he's the first one to try this experiment and people got onto it and they wanted to see him succeed. In our skeptical minds, we doubt that a similar outcome would happen if we started ourselves with the idea of trading paperclip for something. As a people, we haven't got much faith in small things, you and I. We believe that if something is good, then the more of it we can attain, the better off we will be. I don't know how many of you have been to McDonald's or Wendy's or one of those places of late. Food service providers realize this when what's the worst thing that, or first thing they say, might be the worst thing too, first thing they say to you after you've ordered your meal, would you like to supersize it? You pay an extra 90 cents or whatever, and they double or move up your size of portion. We feel cheated when someone else gets the bigger portion of our favorite dessert at dinner. You know, in my family, maybe yours too, that we had a rule that whoever cut the pie chose last. Thereby, you absolutely ensured a very fair distribution. So is bigger always better? Or maybe we can express it differently. Is there any potential at all in being small? Now, into this obsession over bigger is better, Jesus enters the picture and presents a series of little parables that describe the nature of the kingdom of heaven. He begins with what seems to be something that is most improbable. The kingdom of heaven is like a mustard seed. In the Middle East, there are several species of plants that are in the mustard family. And, you know, scholars like to spend endless hours debating about what particular species of mustard Jesus was talking about. But you know what? It doesn't really matter. The point is, it was a mustard seed. Mustard was a valuable plant in Jesus' day, valued for its seeds, which were ground down to produce spice and also to make oil. And although the seeds are of a mustard plant are not the smallest seeds in the world, they were about the smallest that the majority of Jesus' audience would have been familiar with. And left to fully mature, some species can get quite large, almost to the size of a small tree, a brush, and yes, some even get large enough that birds can come and nest on them or sit on them. And then Jesus moves on and he talks about something even smaller. He says that the kingdom of heaven is like the yeast a woman used in making bread. Now the amount of yeast in a loaf of bread is relatively quite small compared to the amount of flour, isn't it? But its influence is incredible because it makes the bread rise. Mustard seeds and yeast. What's Jesus trying to tell us? A clue to understanding Jesus may be found in Matthew 17, verse 20, where the mustard seed makes a comeback. In this verse, Jesus says in response to the disciples' inability to cast out a demon from a boy who was tormented from birth, "You don't have enough faith," Jesus says. "I assure you that if you had faith as small as a mustard seed, you could say to this mountain, 'Move from here to there,' and it would move. Nothing would be impossible." Taken together with the two previous parables, it seems to me that Jesus is talking about potential. Jesus is stating that the kingdom of heaven has so much potential that even the tiniest little amount can do incredible things. The late Peter Marshall, who was a former chaplain of the United States Senate, likes to tell the story, some of you may have heard it before, about an old man who lived high up in the mountains above an Austrian village in the Alps. He'd been hired by the village council for many years to spend his time going around clearing debris from the little pools and the little rivulets that used to come down and feed the main river and main stream that went through town. And so with faithful and silent regularity, he patrolled those hills. He removed leaves and branches. He wiped away the silt that would otherwise choke and contaminate that beautiful flow of water. And by, the village became a very popular destination for visitors. Graceful swans loved to float on the crystal clear streams. Picnickers gathered on the banks. And the view of the water from local shops and cafes was picturesque beyond description. Well, many years passed by, and one evening, this is bound to happen, town council met for its semi-annual meeting. As they reviewed the budget, they noticed that a small amount every year is being paid to the keeper of the spring. The villager treasurer asked an obvious question. Who is this keeper of the spring? Why do we keep him on the payroll year after year? No one ever sees him. Have any of you ever met this man? For all I know, he could be simply taking our money and doing us no good whatsoever. In my opinion, this person's no longer necessary. Everyone in the council agreed with the treasurer, and the council voted unanimously to dismiss the old man from the payroll. For several weeks, nothing much happened. Nothing changed. The village went about its business as usual. By autumn, the trees began to shed their leaves. Small branches snapped off and fell into the pools that fed the stream. It hindered the rushing flow of the sparkling water. One afternoon, people began to notice that there was a yellowish-brown tint in the water. A couple days later, the water was a lot darker. Within a week or two, a slimy film covered sections of the water along the banks, and a foul odor was detected. The swans left the village. So did the tourists. The economy of the village was in serious peril. Likewise, the health of the village, as people were beginning to get sick from drinking the water. An emergency meeting of the village council was held, and after much discussion, they realized their error in judgment, and they hired back the keeper of the spring. And within a few weeks, that beautiful stream came back to life. The swans and the visitors gradually returned, and so did the vitality and well-being of that little village in the Alps. We can never underestimate the potential for good. that even the smallest portion of God's presence can have in this world. One can shudder at the concept of what this world would look like without the seeds and the yeast of the kingdom being scattered all about us. Imagine how many good works and initiatives to improve the lives of other people would be lost if it were not for the faith of God's people. Remove the mustard seeds of faith and there would be no Canadian Baptist Ministries, that's an example, or the Sharing Way. There would be no World Vision, no Salvation Army, no church out serving, no first serving, no pregnancy care center. None of it would exist without the influence of the kingdom growing in us and in our community. And Jesus' point is that it takes such a small amount. The great spectacular demonstrations of the kingdom, while they are memorable, are not the common way the kingdom grows. Sometimes the grandest activities in God's kingdom have begun with the simplest of ideas or the simplest act of faith. I present for your consideration a local thing. Consider we believe in Simcoe Day. Consider that. It all began with a simple idea of helping people who are struggling economically and giving them a special day of their own. And boy, look how that seed grew. It touches all aspects of our churches and our community. The sad part of this fact is that despite evidence of the potential of the kingdom of heaven, we don't diligently look for it. In the parables of the pearl merchant and the land buyer, there's a real sense that these two men were looking for the treasure. In Jesus' day, burying treasure was a common practice to protect valuables from marauding armies and thieves. Well, sometimes a person would bury their treasure and then they would move on or they would die and the treasure would be forgotten. And discovering treasure in a field was a common enough experience in Jesus' day that people actually went out regularly and looked for it. It's kind of like those metal detector people you see out and about. In a similar way, a pearl merchant knew his pearls really well. And he was constantly on the look for that one special pearl. See, Jesus is telling us that we got to be vigilant. We got to be looking for the kingdom at work. To always be looking for those ministries and missions that have great potential to influence many lives. It may be right now that the activity is small, maybe even insignificant in most people's eyes, but you know what? The seed or the yeast is there. The potential is there for greatness. And having discerned the hand of God at work in this seed of potential, we are called on to invest ourselves fully in seeing that seed or yeast reach its fullest potential. Thus the treasure hunter found that treasure. He went out, he sold everything he had just so he could buy that field and claim the treasure within it. Thus the pearl merchant, finding that rare and valuable pearl of great price, sold everything he had to possess it. Talk about putting your eggs all in one basket. Sounds like a very risky venture, but as we like to say, nothing ventured, nothing gained. And nowhere is this saying truer than it refers to the kingdom of God. The two hard questions in this passage, as I see it, are this. Are we even looking for the treasure of the kingdom of heaven? Are we looking? And if we are looking, how committed are we to investing in what we find? How many of us have truly given our all for the kingdom? How many of us have given 50%, 25%, 10%, or even a mustard seed amount? Jesus said, where your heart is, there your treasure will be. What we value most in our lives is where we invest our time, our talent, and our treasure. Are our hearts in the kingdom of heaven? Speaking for myself, I wish I could show an affirmative and confident yes. Yet I know, and the Holy Spirit is constantly making aware of how small my faith really is, how divided my heart is. And this division keeps us from greatness for God. A few years ago at Princeton Seminary, Toyohiko Kagawa delivered a sermon. Kagawa, a Japanese Christian who had risked his life time and time again during World War II to save American airmen who had been shot down over Japan. He hid them. He did his best to keep them alive with the limited amount of food that he had of his own supplies. It wasn't that he really sided with the American cause. It was just that his Christianity compelled him to love even those who were bombing and killing his friends and relatives. Eventually, Kagawa was caught. He was tortured. And while he was in prison, he contracted tuberculosis. That day at Princeton University, when he spoke before the students, his body was frail, his voice was weak. Sitting in the audience were two seminary students who were not obviously impressed with Kagawa's testimony. And at the end of the message, one student turned to the other and said, "He really didn't say much, did he?" At that point, an elderly woman sitting in front of them turned around and said, "Young man, when a man is hanging on the cross, he doesn't have to say anything at all." And that's the point of the parable. Unless we're willing to pay the price, we cannot be part of the kingdom of heaven. The kingdom of heaven is worth more than all of us combined, and its presence is scattered all through us and around us. It may be hard for us to see that first, but as we train ourselves to look for it and treasure it, it will blossom and flourish to the extent that it will dominate our lives. It will also reveal its incredible beauty and vast potential. And we will discover that as we place our hearts in the pursuit of the kingdom, we will have no difficulties at all offering all we have, all we are, to possessing it. So what is the kingdom of heaven like? It's like a mustard seed or bread yeast. It's full of enormous potential to influence everything and everyone around. So what is the kingdom of heaven like? Well, it's like a pearl or a treasure buried in a field that calls on us to give everything to pursue and possess it for ourselves. God's great net has been cast. We're all caught in it. And what determines whether we're a part of the valuable part of that catch or the bad part of that catch has everything to do with whether or not we believe the kingdom of heaven is worthy of our hearts. Choice is entirely up to you.